This is the Medicast, December 18th, 2006.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to the Medicast. I'm Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I want to thank everybody for checking out the show. Welcome to all you brand new listeners out there. I know there are quite a few of you, so I want to welcome you to the Medicast podcast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers. And of course, for all of you long-term listeners who help contribute to the show, I want to welcome you back, and thanks for everything, keeping in touch, and we're getting ready to wrap up a really strong year for the Medicast podcast, and I owe all of that to all of you listeners. So whether you're brand new or have been here for a while, welcome back to the show. This is episode 45, and we're rolling in here towards the end of the year, and a lot's going on. I've got my last final tomorrow morning for my nursing program right now, and so I've got to get downstairs and work on that a little bit later this evening. It's about 5 o'clock on Sunday night, so I should have plenty of time to get the last-minute studying in I need to do. But in the meantime, we're here for the Medicast, and I've got a lot going on. I got quite a few letters from listeners this week and a lot of good information. In fact, I got one really good letter from listener Mark. Mark was looking at a problem he ran into on his job when he works on an ambulance, and it was an interesting situation. So, Mark, I got your email, and everybody else, I'm getting some feedback from a couple of people that I know. One of them, Peter Canning, who's going to give me an opinion on what he thinks about what's going on. And I've also checked in with a nurse that does a podcast, Tatiana, who does the Nursing Studio podcast, and she's going to give me some feedback as well. So, Mark, I will provide both the information on that email as a whole for the listeners and the feedback that I got from the two experts I brought in to kind of look at that situation, as well as my own comments and thoughts on the matter. So I wanted to let you know that I was handling that way. I also got a very interesting email from listener Joe, and Joe sent in some follow-up to my story last week on the neodymium magnets, the super powerful magnets that are out there right now, and people are using them for all kinds of things. Joe sent me two links, one to a wiki site that talks about the magnets themselves, and also a link to the Nintendo Wii information safety page, and it talks about using the controllers in the Wii near pacemakers, and it's basically a transmission warning. It's basically an RF signal warning, and it's right there on the page if you go down to radio frequency interference. And something else to be aware of, maybe grandpa is sitting with his grandkids playing their new game system with them, and he has a cardiac event. Well, you might want to keep that in mind if you see a new Nintendo Wii box sitting around, that they might have an issue because the controllers for that device are radio frequency controllers, and there could be a problem caused by using them in close proximity. It doesn't say you absolutely 100% can't use them. It just says you shouldn't use them until you've checked with your doctor first to make sure there's no interference or frequency problems. Probably just in a save your butt safety warning, just like you shouldn't use your hair dryer in the bathtub. But it's important for companies to do that nowadays, I guess. And I suspect there's no real interference problems because the FCC manages those things pretty well. The only time there'd be an issue would be if one or the other wasn't transmitting properly. And I could see that causing a problem if there was a defect in the materials in some way. Anyway, I want to thank you, Joe, for that information. Joe also had some comments about the podcast and some suggestions. And Joe, I take all those things to heart. So I may not institute everything that gets suggested to me, but I certainly read and listen to and think about everything that the listeners send in. So Joe, I want to thank you for that. And for all you other listeners out there, if you have some comments, if you have some things you'd like to talk about, you can reach me here at the Medicast at podmedic@mac.com. That's podmedic@mac.com. You can also visit the website, www.medicast.com, and leave a comment there on any of the blog posts. If you go down to the bottom of each one, you'll see a link there for comments, and you can click that and quickly register for the site, which is easy to do, and go ahead and leave your comment. And I always check in on those. They send me an email whenever a comment comes in. And the good thing about that is your comment is also posted there for other people and viewers of the site to read. So I encourage you to do that as well. You can also click the link in the show notes for the MobiTalk voicemail box, which you can use right on your computer. And that link is right there in the show notes. Again, I talked a little bit last week about the Christmas present for me, the PodMedic, and if there was something that you listeners could do for me, that would be go ahead and head over to the MedicCast site at MedicCast.com, and in the show notes page for any of the podcasts, you will see a link to my survey, and that survey is a thing I'm putting together through a website called PodTrack, and it's basically a marketing survey. This is kind of going to help me get some decent sponsorship for the program and help offset some of my costs. And in order to do that, I really need to have a handle on who's listening to my program, how many of them are male or female. It's really just basic demographic information. So if I had a Christmas wish for the podcast, I guess it would be that you guys head on over to the show notes page and click into that link for the survey. Those of you that have done it, I've seen that some of you have been doing that in recent weeks. I really appreciate it. And when I get that information back, I will gather all of it together and send it in and put it up for you, the listeners, just so you guys can know a little bit about who else is listening to the show. It's not top secret information. I'd certainly happily share it with everybody. So there is no personal information entered there. They do have an option for you to sign up to be a podcast test person, I guess, but that's completely optional. The survey takes 5 to 10 minutes, so if you could give me 5 to 10 minutes of your time back, I'd really appreciate it. Over there, you can click the link at the show notes. Moving into the news, the first item in the news is some sad news, and it's something you probably already read about if you follow these kind of things. There was a line of duty deaths last Sunday when a helicopter crashed in the Cajon Pass in California, and 3 emergency providers were killed in that crash. Last Sunday, Mercy Ambulance, Air Ambulance Service helicopter crashed, killing pilot Paul Latour, flight nurse Katrina Kish, and paramedic Jerry Miller, who had just dropped off a patient at Loma Linda University Medical Center and were headed back to their base station when their aircraft went down. And our thoughts and prayers here at the MedicCast are with all of their families and their colleagues out there. And that crash is still under investigation, but it's one of those things associated with air ambulance service that is very dangerous, part of our service. And our thoughts and prayers are with them and their families and their colleagues at this time. I talk here all the time at the MedicCast about getting out into our communities and educating the public that we serve, and that serves a lot of purposes. First, it saves them from injury and early death and medical problems that they may not be aware of, but you know, it also is to our benefit too, because it makes it easier on us. It reduces the number of calls for things that are easily preventable. One of the things that I found a story about where group was getting out into the community was in Oregon. And one of the things that they found was that they get people complaining to them, you know, saying, hey, you know, the law says I don't have to do something. And we see that here in Maryland. Maryland has a helmet law for motorcycles, and some of the states around us don't. So like Pennsylvania, people will come into Maryland and grumble and complain about wearing a helmet on their motorcycle. Well, we all know that that makes a huge difference in their survivability of an accident. And it's not just a personal preference issue. At least this is my belief. It impacts many other people when you don't wear a helmet. And they found this to be true in Oregon as well. In the state of Oregon, when you turn 16, you no longer have to wear a bike helmet. You're not required to. So the state law requires putting helmets on kids up to the age of 16. And after 16, you don't have to wear that personal protective equipment. Well, there's two people out there, an EMT paramedic by the name of Brent Brotherton and Neva Jones, an intensive care unit nurse manager at a regional hospital. And the two of them have got together and are going into the schools and teaching teenagers that just because they turn 16 and just because the state law says they don't have to wear bike helmets anymore and other protective gear does not mean that they're anything special. It doesn't mean that they magically gain harder bones at that point in their life. So they really have presented quite a strong presentation to these teenagers, and there seems to be a really positive response to it. They tell a story in part of their program about an Oregon girl who stopped wearing her helmet the day she turned 16 because she didn't have to anymore. And 2 weeks later, while riding her bicycle, she sustained serious head injuries in an accident that left her permanently disabled. So this is something that is relatively easy to do. Think about it. Go to your hospitals. Talk to the public outreach personnel at that hospital. Every hospital has them. They're people that are out in the community trying to provide information to the community. It's one of the mandates that many hospitals have to their community service projects. And you can be part of that. They have funding in place so they can get you materials. They can provide you personnel to help teach. And you can go into the schools in your area, teach elementary school, middle school, high school kids about the importance of wearing safety belts, the importance of using booster seats, the importance of wearing helmets on motorcycles, bicycles, and other activity devices. And so, again, I urge people to get out, and we're not just here to ride the ambulances. Prevention is really a strong part of our practice in medicine, and we need to be proponents of these kind of things in our communities, because ultimately it doesn't just save lives, which is very important, but it also saves us time and enables us to be available to go out to other emergencies as they occur by reducing the need for these easily preventable emergencies. So a few weeks ago, we had that horrible bus accident in Alabama where the bus took a header off of the overpass down to the street below, causing deaths and injuries related to that crash. And I've talked a little bit about the need for being prepared for such things. Recently, there was a fog-related crash in Union County, North Carolina, where a school bus carrying 26 students was involved in an accident at an intersection where another driver in a pickup truck failed to see a stop sign in time due to the fog and ran into the back of the bus and then flipped around and hit the side of the bus, caving in the side of the bus. Luckily, only the bus driver and a few students were seriously injured in this accident. The rest were not injured. But again, I encourage you, this is something you need to think about. Talk to your partner about, talk to the people on your shift before and after your shift about, talk to your supervisors about it. This is something that we should be practicing for. You know, the chances of us running into a weapons of mass destruction incident are very slim. The chances of us running into a school bus or a tour bus or a train accident are much more likely, depending on what kind of roads and highways we have in our district. And this is something that we should all be prepared for. And this kind of leads me into just a pitch for next week's episode. I'm going to be handling and bringing in an interview with Rick Rosati, who is a National Incident Management System trainer. And we're going to talk a little bit about the NIMS system and how easy it is really for all of us to become NIMS compliant, and also what NIMS compliance might mean for our services, whether we are or are not NIMS compliant as far as funding. So I'll urge you to check back next week on that and find out a little bit more about it. Moving on to multi-system trauma, the United States Navy is urging the FDA to approve them to begin using a human blood substitute that they desperately need on the battlefield. And this is something that makes perfect sense. You know, we know this to be true. Multi-system traumas, many times people are dying because they're losing so much blood volume, whether internally or externally, that they are unable to maintain your vascular space and their blood pressure to keep perfusion up. And they need a blood substitute that is capable of carrying oxygen to those decreased perfusion cells. So the Navy is urging the testing of a product in the field of a product called Let me find it here. Hemopure, which is derived from cow blood. And they want to test it on 1,100 trauma victims in emergency situations that they encounter as part of the military. In Iraq, 68% of U.S. troops who die of trauma before reaching the hospital suffer severe bleeding as part of their injuries. And the Navy's Deputy Surgeon General, Rear Admiral John Matazoon, told a panel of federal health advisors that he believes an available blood substitute could save many of those lives. And I've talked about blood substitutes before. I have a link in the show notes back to episode 5 of the Medicast, where I talked about some of the discussions over the Polyheme trial. Polyheme is a product of Northfield Laboratories, and the Hemopure is a product of Baxter International. And they are both coming under some fire for the way that these products are being tested in the field. And part of the issue is around the fact that you would be testing these products on individuals who are not able to consent or provide decent consent most of the time because of the severity of their injuries. And how else do you test a product like this effectively if you don't find out how it's going to work in severe trauma situations? So this is something I touched on in the past. There's been a great deal of ethics discussions medically about whether you can conduct a medical trial on people in the emergency setting when they can't really effectively opt out of the trial if they don't want to. But I think, and I agree with the Navy here, sometimes I think the negatives involved with this outweigh, the benefits outweigh the negatives, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I guess, you know, you have to hope that, first of all, I guess we need to make sure that the initial trials that they've done on healthy individuals have provided some information on the fact that this product is at least basically safe to a healthy individual, that it doesn't cause multiple severe reactions, that it doesn't cause negative effects on other body systems. And I think all that is really done before it ever gets tested in the field, tested on animals first, then people, and then field tests. But I think that once they get past that point, you know, if you're going to die anyway, if there's something that possibly could save you, we need to start using these products. These people are probably going to die. We can't just replace their fluids with a isotonic fluid replacement like lactated ringers or normal saline, because that doesn't stay in the vascular space very long. And usually only a quarter of it remains there for any period of time to pump up blood pressure. So we need something that's much more effective than that. And I think that the blood substitute is something that's a worthy product to be researching. And I hope that this continues. I came across another story this week that is, I think, going to have some strong impact on us in the field. And I don't mean a positive impact. Now, I could be completely wrong, but let me go ahead and relate the story that concerns me. There are new federal requirements in place right now that is requiring proof of citizenship rules for enrolling patients in Medicaid. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole legal immigrant, illegal immigrant argument, or whether they're actually providing services that are equal to some of the things they get back from the system. I don't want to get into that. I want to talk specifically about how this could impact us in the field. Proof of citizenship rules took effect in July, and the New Hampshire Healthy Kids Program has seen a 50% decline in enrollment since that took effect. Now, under the requirements, individuals who seek Medicaid benefits have to provide proof of U.S. citizenship, birth certificate, passport, some other identification. And these are to make sure that only legal residents receive Medicaid benefits. But I don't think that, I don't know if this is the right way to go with this, especially when we're dealing with children and medical care. You know, we're hard-pressed to get decent medical care out there into the community. And there's a concern that some of the people that are trying to fill this out are legal residents, but balk at having to get and dig up the extra information that is required under the new rules, that maybe they don't close by or even have their child's birth certificate and don't know how to obtain it. The goal here in this program was to sign up kids for healthcare services. In a related story, I found a story about New Orleans, their health infrastructure being sorely strained by infants born to Hispanic immigrants. And this is related because these immigrants aren't just down there just mooching off the system. These immigrants are people that were brought into the area to help rebuild the city that was ravaged by the hurricanes. And so these people are there working to rebuild a city in a situation where a lot of American citizens or residents that were there before have opted not to return. And so these people are there working on that. Well, in the few years they've been there, guess what? They've started families, because that's what people do. And their infants, which don't have healthcare services because they're not legal citizens, are straining the infrastructure. And this is where my concern comes in. We already have issues with hospital overcrowding. We already have problems with people using the emergency medical system for a primary care physician or a primary care medical treatment. They call 911 for a sore throat because they don't have a doctor and they think that getting to the emergency room by ambulance will get them seen faster. These are all issues that are very near and dear to all of us. And I think short-sightedness on the part of politicians in some ways have a negative impact on our ability to provide effective emergency care to our communities. And so I'm not saying this is 100% wrong or 100% right. I am saying that it definitely bears more scrutiny from experts in the field. And by experts in the field, I don't mean politicians with an opinion. I mean real experts, people in the local communities who have a vested interest in solving the problems in their communities, like overcrowded emergency rooms and slow response times for ambulances because of overuse of the EMS 911 system. That's going to wrap up the news, and I want to jump right into this week's tip and trick of the week. This week, I'm looking at some things to do with getting ready for a national registry or a state registry or a local practical exam. Now, this might just be a unit exam you're taking, or it might be the final that you're taking for the whole shebang. But I had an opportunity to help precept a national registry test last weekend, and I ran into some things that, you know, having been on the other side of that stage, I remember I was a complete wreck on the day of the practical exam. And I found that there are two types of EMT and paramedic students out there. There are those students that are really great book learners and take tests really well. And there are those students who are great practical hands-on learners and maybe have to struggle a little bit with their book information. And of course, there are those that are good at both, but I haven't found too many of those. But what I have found is that the book learners tend to be kind of afraid of their practical examination, and the hands-on learners are really can't wait for the practical examination and are really scared to death of their written test or their online test if they're doing a computerized version. So I'm going to cover over the next few weeks or months some things about dealing with practical exams and also with written exams, some testing ideas that I've come up with and found. Now, these are things that anybody can do, but I thought I'd start off with the practical exam since that was the most recent experience I had dealing with people in that testing situation. Well, one of the first things I saw was people just really stressed to the point of they couldn't sit down, they couldn't sit still. And this is a test anxiety thing, and a little bit of stress is good for the body. It heightens our senses, it heightens our attention and our focus, but it can quickly downslide into bad stress, where you're into moderate or severe stressful situations, nearing panic, in fact. So what do you do about something like this, this test stress and this test anxiety? Well, there's a few things you can do to prepare for this. First of all, get a good night's sleep, get a good breakfast, and also being prepared mentally for the test. Now, I don't mean that, you know, yeah, that sounds pretty obvious, but I think I mean something a little different than you might be thinking. Preparing mentally for something like a national registry test is learning a few tricks on how to take any kind of practical exam in the medical field. And the way you do that is by taking a breath and taking a pause after you walk into each station, especially in national registry. One of the things that you're instructed in before the test begins by the head coordinator and at each station is, if there's any kind of hands-on part of it, take a moment to look over the equipment and make sure that you're familiar with it and that it's in good working order. This is a great opportunity for you if you're a nervous wreck, because you walk into the room, the guys talk to you, you're not expected to just leap right into the scenario and perform the skill that you're there to test for. You can take a moment and calm down and get your hands on the equipment that's in the room. What does that do? Well, if you're not familiar with it, you're not going to fumble over it when you get to that part of the test. You tell the instructor, this isn't what I'm familiar with using. Now, this is more likely to crop up if you're testing out of your general area where you're going to take a retest or something, or you're going to take the exam in another state where you didn't originally learn the material. But this is your opportunity. Can you demonstrate for me? I'm not familiar with this type of IV setup. And we ran into that a lot when I saw this testing situation this past weekend, where the people testing weren't familiar with a needleless IV system. They were familiar with a needled port system and didn't know how to correctly use the medications to access and screw into the needleless system. So they were sitting there with a needle in one hand, you know, a syringe and a needle in one hand, and a needleless port in the other, and they were trying to figure out how to get the needle in there. The time to do that is not in the middle of your testing situation. The time to do that is at the beginning when you get your hands-on time. So that's my first suggestion, is take advantage of that opportunity to familiarize yourself with the equipment. The other thing is you can take the equipment, pick it up, play with it, and then you can lay it back down in the order in which you're going to use it. Now, this seems like it's very simple, but think about it. If you sit there and lay everything from left to right or right to left, however you prefer it, then your hand just reaches down for the next thing. Prepare your equipment. If you're doing the IV or IO setup, you want to make sure you have your 2x2s there. You want to make sure you have your materials for securing the IO device to the leg so that it doesn't move around. And you want it wrapping up an impaled object. You need to have all that handy. You need to make sure your flushes are there. You need to make sure all of these things are there. This is no different than when you're with the KED or anything else. Preparing your equipment will save you a lot of grief later on. So that's your first thing. Take a time to do this, and not only will it prepare you and tell you what you're going to need for the test, but you'll also be able to take that time to calm yourself down. And doing that will refocus you to the task at hand and not worry about the fact that it's a test. Is your anxiety going to go away completely? Absolutely not. I'm not saying that. But it will help you to be better focused for the task at hand. Some other things you might want to think about is, don't forget things like scene safety and BSI. We hammer on it all the time. Heck, I end my shows with it. Why do we do that? Well, because you can forget to say it when you're all stressed out. We all know that we're going to wear gloves treating patients. We all know that we're going to focus on being safe on scene and focusing on that. But in a testing situation where you have to say it each and every time you walk into the room, you need to kind of have something to remind you. So I'm going to teach you a little lesson that I may have talked about in the past on the show, but I think it bears repeating. And this was taught to me when I took the National Registry Paramedic Exam, and it actually saved me in one of my stations where I forgot to verbalize scene safety BSI. Put on your gloves first thing in the morning when you get to the testing site. Before you go to the first scenario, put on a pair of gloves and don't take them off. Okay, your hands are going to get sweaty and stinky, and you're going to have to wash them 10 times to get the rubber smell out of them. I know this. But if you don't take your gloves off all day, if you walk into a station and forget to say scene safety BSI, if you have gloves on, what the testing scenario says for the preceptor in the test, most of them say verbalizes or demonstrates scene safety or body substance isolation. Guess what? You've demonstrated it. You're wearing gloves. So this is a hint I have, and I think it bears repeating whenever you're in a testing situation. If you put your gloves on and wear them all day and don't take them off, guess what? You won't forget Or at least if you do, you're less likely to get dinged for it. So these are just a few quick tips to kind of help you get through the practical exam. I've also included a link in the show notes, which will take you directly to the National Registry EMT and candidate documents, which actually have your basic skill level sheets and your advanced skill level sheets and other materials that you might find interesting to you, all downloadable as PDF files. So if you have a particular site or scenario you're interested in, you can kind of check out there and learn exactly what the preceptor is going to be checking you off on, what you're going to get marked off for each part of the scenario that you're dealing with. You can learn the steps that'll get you a full score. This test is not there to defeat you. It is not there to trip you up. It is just there to test basic skills, skills like history taking, general treatment protocol, and general mechanical skills you need to learn. So take a little bit of this information, use it in the next time you go into a testing situation, and hey, email me back here, podmedic@mac.com, and let me know how your test went and if any of these ideas worked out well for you. I'd love to hear back from you. For the med of the week this week, I thought I would cover good old D50, dextrose, which we use, of course, to treat people who are either known or suspected to be having a hypoglycemic diabetic type emergency. So let's just take a look at this one. And it's something we're all pretty aware of and knowledgeable about, but it doesn't hurt to cover these things again periodically. So I thought I would do that here. First of all, the drug is of the class carbohydrate and is also considered a hypertonic IV solution, meaning it's of higher concentration than the surrounding tissues. The term dextrose is used to describe a 6-carbon sugar compound, D-glucose, which is the principal form of carbohydrate used by the body. And it will be used in emergency situations to treat hypoglycemia and manage coma of unknown origin. It has an effect onset of about a minute, and it will last, depending on the degree of hypoglycemia, and that's variable. If a person is extremely hypoglycemic, the body is going to be starved for sugar, and it is going to grab it immediately. So you're not going to see it last very long within the blood supply. If the person's only mildly hypoglycemic and you give them an amp at D50, well, you might notice that they run pretty high for some time because they only needed a certain amount of it to get themselves back up to normal levels, and the body doesn't use it all right away. So you might see that, but it starts working pretty quickly. And all of us who've worked with diabetics and patients of altered mental status from hypoglycemia in the field have all seen the magic of D50 at work. Indications for this medication are, of course, hypoglycemia, altered level of consciousness for an unknown reason, coma for an unknown reason, seizure for an unknown reason. And, of course, also, if you have a cardiac arrest patient that is a known diabetic, you may want to consider administration of D50 in your drug preparations for cardiac arrest. Now, it's not going to be your first or second line drug. You're going to treat the cardiac symptoms you see. But when you have a patient that is in PEA or asystole, one of the things you want to consider is, of course, hypoglycemia as one of your H's to consider when you have that kind of an algorithm situation. There are no contraindications for using IV dextrose in an emergency. It is really something that we will need to give unless we have a known knowledge of some kind of an intracerebral bleed or hemorrhagic stroke. But that's not something we're likely to know in the field. Adverse reactions we may see from the patient may be warmth or pain, burning from at the site of infusion. They may also experience thrombus from the glucose solution, as well as tissue necrosis from the extravasation if your IV line is not patent. And that'll bring me down to my special considerations. You need to make sure you're getting your blood checks. So you're doing your glucose stick and getting an idea of what their blood sugar level both before and after administration, so you can see if its effectiveness is working. You may have a diabetic who has absolutely no insulin on board, and giving them D50 doesn't do a whole lot for them. So you need to be aware and kind of have an idea of where their blood sugar is before and after administration. Also, you want to make sure, again, that you have a patent IV line. And one of the things that I was always taught, and you probably as well, when you're administering D50, you want to draw back on the syringe periodically and make sure you're getting a flash of blood, and then go ahead and press on through and give the rest of the medication. And that's just to maintain that, make sure that your IV line's still going into the vascular space, because if it does get into surrounding tissues, because the IV's been displaced, you can have tissue necrosis at the site. So make sure you're using a large vein and that you're aspirating periodically. You can also see some kinds of neurological symptoms, especially in thiamine deficient patients, such as chronic alcoholics. And you can be prepared, if you have it on board your unit, to take care of this by administering 100 milligrams IV of thiamine. Not all of us have this in our protocol, but this is basically the drug cocktail for known alcoholics that are experiencing unknown unconsciousness or altered mental status associated with their symptoms. So that's D50 in a nutshell, quick and easy look at that medication, and that's going to wrap up the show. I'd like to take a few moments here to thank everybody that shopped at the store.medicast.com link. If you go to that site, it'll actually take you to my Amazon affiliate page. That helps offset some of the costs of my hosting, and I do appreciate those of you that have shopped there. It really helps out the show. I get a little percentage of everything you spend at Amazon through that link, and you can get everything that Amazon carries. I do have a selection of EMS products that are right on that page, but there's also links off to the right-hand side that you can get to anything that Amazon sells. And, you know, you don't pay any more than you'd ordinarily pay through Amazon, which is nice for you if you normally shop there and you're looking for the price that they have and it matches something. I don't want you to shop there if it's not something that you're getting a good value for, so I'm not sending you over there frivolously. If you can find it somewhere else cheaper, my God, go get it that way. But if you are shopping at Amazon and you are planning to do so and you go through my site, I get a little something back from that, and it helps offset what I spend to bring the Medicast to you on a weekly basis. So I really appreciate you doing that. And again, you can link to that at store.medicast.com. I will be adding to that link, and it won't just be the Amazon store alone. I will have some other things that I'll be offering, and that's going to be coming up in the first quarter of the new year. I've got some exciting things that I have planned for the Medicast to add some value to what you're getting here at the podcast, as well as some opportunities to do some other things. Anyway, I want to thank you for helping out the show. Again, you can check back often and check in the show notes for the links to everything that I've covered today. You can also make sure you contact me at podmedic@mac.com if you have any comments about anything I've talked about. I am not perfect, everybody, and I think you guys know that. I'm here to provide information to you that I think is interesting to me, and I may make a mistake or an error quite frequently. So I rely on you guys out there to keep me straight. If I've misspoken on something or made a mistake or missed some additional information that you think is important, send me the links and the information you want me to cover, and I'll review it and post it up to the podcast listeners either on the site or in the podcast itself. Just for those of you that check out the Medicast News, which is a midweek news program where I do 4 or 5 news stories in about 5 minutes midweek. I didn't get one out this past week because of finals. I am hoping to get more back on schedule, but hey, it's the week before Christmas and it might be a little crazy here. So just to let you know, there might not be a Medicast till after the new year or a Medicast News. I will still get the Medicast out. I'm going to do some things and record ahead a little bit so that I can be prepared and post up a show both Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. So if you're working on New Year's Day or Christmas Day, just to let you know, the Medicast will be there ready for you to go first thing in the morning on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day and New Year's Day. I make that commitment to you. However, the Medicast news might fall by the wayside midweek just so I can get some things done with my family. But it will be back raring to go the first week of January 2007. As always, you can visit the site, visit it often. Click on the links there in the show notes if you need to get further information. And as always, support the advertisers on the site. If you see something that is of interest to you, go ahead and click through to it and take a look at it. All of that helps out the show. I will wrap up, as I always do, with some great PodSafe music. This week, another holiday selection for the season. It's a track by Jeff Smith, who we've heard before here on the Medicast. He records the tune Not on the Radio, which is kind of a podcaster anthem song, and I've played that here before on the show. So I'm going to kick off here with a little message, holiday message from Jeff Smith, and then I'm going to move into one of his own original songs, My Own Merry Christmas. So you can check out his music over at the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. And if you like any of the music here on the Medicast, if there's a track that's available over at the iTunes Music Store, I go ahead and have a link to a list of all of the iTunes songs, available songs. You can click on that link in the show notes as well, and it'll take you right over to that list, and you can find the music that's available there and download the tracks that are of interest to you. I guess that's it. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Until next time, scene safety, BSI.
'Twas the night before Christmas, my face was a grin, 'cause I found free music on the PMN. Hey y'all, this is Jeff Smith from the PodSafe Music Network, wishing you a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
The snow is falling down tonight. A carol's ringing through the night this Christmas. The choir right outside your door could be singing one more song for you. If I could join them too, I would. But if there's no other way, then for me to be so far this Christmas, I can write a couple words and a tune. Here's my Christmas melody for you. Go ahead and light the Christmas tree. Go ahead and hang the mistletoe. Go ahead and set another place for me. I will be there in your heart this Christmas. Snuggle close up to the fire. Pretend that I'm watching it with you. Though I'm many miles away, please let my own Merry Christmas find a way to you today. So let me whisper in your ear a thing or two you'd like to hear for Christmas. I'll tell you that I'm coming home, or I'll be there when you carve the turkey, trim the tree, or maybe that a big surprise would be to see it in my eyes on Christmas. But if I couldn't make it home, I could send it in a song you could play while I'm far away. Christmas tree, go ahead and hang the mistletoe. Go ahead and set another place for me. I will be there in your heart this Christmas. Snuggle close up to the fire. pretend that I'm watching it with you. Though I'm so many miles away, please let my own Merry Christmas find a way to you today. Ooh. Ooh. Go ahead and light the Christmas tree. Go ahead and hang the mistletoe. Go ahead and set another place for me. I will be there in your heart this Christmas. Snuggle close up to the fire. Pretend that I'm watching it with you. Though I'm so many miles away, please let my own Merry Christmas find a way to you. Though I'm so many miles away, please let my own Merry Christmas find a way to you today.